Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. I'm Ron Edwards, co-host of the Don and Ron program, coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, a blue city, if you will, in a red state, and in a red nation, if you will. A lot of, I just began to tell you, as a historian, watching the events of the last 6 days, we are now day six of the beginning of the imperial presidency of Donald Trump, if you will. He's done in the last 2 days, in the last 48 hours, many of the things that he promised his constituency, now his constituency, that he intended to do, build the wall, deal with immigration, if you will, remove people, stop people from coming into the country, if you will, dealing with local problems, the whole issue of a woman's right, if you will, abortions and such things as that. And the president has created a firestorm by indicating, and this is kind of peculiar, kind of makes you wonder how clear he's thinking. Maybe he's mesmerized by being in the Oval Office. But he says that there was massive voter fraud, probably the most massive in the history of any nation on the face of this planet, maybe in an alternative universe or on some other planet in some other solar system. Maybe they had that kind of mismanagement of the ballot box, if you will, voter fraud, and et cetera. President Trump, the imperial president, as we will refer to him hereafter, maintaining anywhere from 3 to 5 million illegals voted, if you will. He said today in an interview with anchor of ABC's news program that all the votes were against him, if you will. This is a man who I realize and clearly remember many of us in the middle part of 2016, as he still really didn't believe that he was going to be elected 45th president of the United States of America, saying that there was voter fraud and that he was the target, if you will. And he got his base, as they like to say, his constituents, all pumped up, fired up. In fact, some of the more extreme right-wingers were indicating they were prepared to take up arms. There would be civil war in America if the Donald was denied the presidency because of voter fraud and et cetera. Of course, those same kind of people have nothing to say now because the Donald, their man, the imperial president, is in office, day six, as we said before. He said so much here just since he was sworn in last Friday. 25 million jobs for many of you Americans in the next, well, couple of years, really. You know, he seems to be vague, if you will, on actual timelines. He's not a man that really believes in detail and specificity, if you will. But I imagine they're working with him, grooming him, and he will be able to articulate a little bit better and sound more presidential. Of course, he has a good teacher, as we've said on the last two programs here on the Don and Ron program, coming to you again from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, that he has one of the best teachers, Vladimir Putin, president of the Russian Federation, if you will, formerly known as the Soviet Union, if you will, communism, and etc. And we repeat again, we talked about it on our television program to air, which airs weekly here in the Twin Cities on MTN, the Minneapolis Television Network, that the love affair, the relation between he and Vladimir Putin and the relationship between communists, if you will, white communists, if you will, let us not get confused, that the extreme right in this country are clear in who the bad people are. The bad people are the dark-skinned communists, if you will, the Chinese, the Vietnamese, And then, of course, the Iranians and people of that persuasion, though the Iranians are, of course, considered to be Muslim, Arab, well, no, I'm sorry, the Iranians are Persians, fundamentalists and etc., but they're all dark-skinned people who subscribe, according to the Trump doctrine, to communism and evilness and etc. You remember the statement many years ago, the evil empire and such things as that. And by the way, we are extremely serious on this program with regards to folks need to really analyze who is the bad commie and who is the good commie, if you will. Now, of course, if old Joe McCarthy was still around, which of course he's not, but even now he would be turning over in his grave if he saw the coziness and the love relationship between the, and we now call it the Western Kremlin at the Washington, D.C. In fact, we're going to rename the White House the Kremlin House, if you will, and, of course, the Eastern Kremlin, which is in Moscow and, of course, is under the direct supervision of Vladimir Putin. Well, in fact, the Western Kremlin in Washington, D.C. is under the auspices and the control of Vladimir Putin. As we've said on the last couple programs here on the Ron and Don program, again, coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, we are at a very, very dangerous period in the United States of America. I'm afraid that far too many of you really don't realize what a dangerous period that we're in with regards to someone who is not been prepared, if you will, tutored, if you will, conditioned and prepared to be president of the most powerful nation on the face of the earth just based on our nuclear capabilities. Of course, the Russians have equal nuclear capabilities. The Chinese have significant enough capability to make planet Earth a white star 5,000 years from now in some distant galaxy, a white star that exploded and disappeared in the vast depths and reaches, quote-unquote, of the galaxy, if you will. I was listening to President Trump talk in terms of the adrenaline, how the adrenaline was flowing when he was given the nuclear codes. For those of you that pretend that you don't know what the nuclear codes are, those are the codes that they give you. You always have a gentleman following you around case on a pair of handcuffs on and is handcuffed to the individual. The person is normally a naval officer, if you will. He carries the briefcase, which has inside of it the computer, quote-unquote, that activates the nuclear codes and sets America's nuclear arsenal into play, if you will. I would suspect, particularly given the disposition of General Flynn, who's gotten caught, everyone is waiting for someone, WikiLeaks or somebody, to make available and make public the intercept in the conversation between General Flynn, the National Security Advisor to the Imperial President, and the Russian, quote-unquote, Minister of Defense, if you will, a telephone conversation in which clearly General Flynn, and he was not calling to wish, first of all, to wish a Merry Christmas to Vladimir Putin or to send condolences over the crash of a Russian military aircraft in the Black Sea, which cost the lives of all of the members of the very prestigious and beloved in Russia Soviet Army Corps, if you will, / chorus, if you will. All members of that chorus group perished in a situation in which an aircraft went down after departing a city there in Mother Russia. The reason that we stay with you on this is that we are looking at both the international and domestic picture. And we had said to some of our associates in the last couple of days that it appears that for the purpose of sanctuary cities, if you will, it is quite clear it will be Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco. They may even make the city in which we are broadcasting from, Minneapolis, Minnesota, part of the Twin Cities, one of those cities to be targeted. A week ago on our television program here in the Twin Cities, we had the pleasure of having the Minneapolis City Council President, Barb Johnson, who we have known for many, many, many years. And in the course of our interview, which aired here in the Twin Cities yesterday, Sunday, is that we asked her the question about the sanctuary issue and confirmed what we already knew and kind of expressed prior to going on the air with her, that the Republicans in the Minnesota legislature, the Republicans here in Minnesota control now both the House and the Senate, if you will, and we are a very, very red state, if you will, with the exception of the city of Minneapolis and the city of St. Paul and some of the surrounding areas, primarily connected to the 5th Congressional District and the 4th Congressional District, the 5th Congressional District being Minneapolis, 4th Congressional District being St. Paul, that we are pretty much isolated here. You know, in fact, Hillary Clinton almost lost the state of Minnesota if it had not been for the urban vote, if you will. She would have lost, and the strong turnout in the 8th Congressional District, which is a very, very large congressional district, stretching from way up on the Minnesota northern border all the way down to St. Cloud almost. But if it had not been for the turnout of so many progressive slash liberals slash supporters of Hillary Clinton, the Republicans would have carried the state of Minnesota. And so a conversation that has been going on here is that there need to be some lessons taught, if not for the fact that the governor of the state of Minnesota is a Democrat, all the other quote-unquote important branches of government, in other words, the legislature, are as red as the red Soviet flag can be. I'm sorry, we should have said that. But it's a fact. In fact, we continue now to repeat the surveys that were taken right after the November 8th election, which showed that 37% of white Republican voters indicated a preference for Vladimir Putin and the communist form of government. We repeat that. 37% indicated a preference, 37% white Republican voters indicated a preference for the Russian slash communist form of government under the leadership of the one of the world's worst quote unquote violators of human rights and et cetera, Vladimir Putin. But Vladimir Putin is the darling of many, and I guess this is something that we stay away, or we are kind of encouraged to stay away from talking about. We here are not impressed with that. But that clearly, that Vladimir Putin is the kind of individual whose picture probably is in the homes and on the wall of more Americans than we know. And again, we go back to that if good old Joe McCarthy and others were alive, if you will, they would just scream to the high heavens. But things have been happening in the United States for a long time. And you actually have to go back to the very, very late 20s, but particularly during the 1930s, during the Depression, when more communist cells were developed in the United States than anyone wants to admit to, even though we were in the midst of a Depression and et cetera. And maybe that was kind of the outlet. But what happened was a lot of people converted, if you will, to communism. It was only the battle particularly in 1937, 38, and 39, until the Nazis under Adolf Hitler began to make moves in Europe, there was really a lot of arguments. In fact, right here in the city that we are broadcasting from, the city, the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, first of all, this city has always been very strongly anti-Semitic, if you will. Our Jewish friends don't like to have us historically talk about that because it's an embarrassment, but the fact of the matter is in the 1920s and 30s, and if it had not been for the Second World War and the level of brutality and death that the fascists, which is what the Germans and the Italians were, the Japanese were of a different political persuasion, if you will, per se. And we talked about that on last week's program, the history of how the so-called Axis powers came into play, though the Japanese, the Italians, and the Germans signed mutual defense treaties and et cetera, et cetera. The Japanese understood better than people give them credit for in the history books. The Japanese understood that they were little yellow people, and they were not seen in the same light as the good white Christians, quote-unquote, of the fascist Italians and the fascist Nazi Germans, if you will, which is another piece that people don't like to talk about. In some regards, for so long, people knew about the brutality and the genocide being carried out, not only against Jews, but against a whole host of people, ranging from gypsies, what populations of color. In fact, we did a piece a couple of years ago on the history and the annihilation of the small black African population in Mother Germany prior to the conflict actions taken against the black population, which was annihilated. In fact, you very rarely can find any written material that talks in terms of the black Africans who had been relocated to Mother Germany, if you will. People tend to forget that up until the First World War, that Germany was attempting to become a significant colonial power in black Africa, like all the rest of the white Christian European nations were. Portugal, Spain, Italy, particularly Britain, France, if you will, Belgium. The Belgians, one of the most brutal colonial powers, if you will. The French and the Spanish weren't too far behind. But it was a part of history that no one talked about. The small, there's a number of maybe 25,000 black Africans who had come from both the eastern and western colonial enclaves that were under Imperial Germany, under the Kaiser, if you will, and how they had been brought to Mother Germany, if you will, to work as domestic servants and such things as that. And then, you know, they kind of integrated, if that's the word you want to use, into the German population. But regrettably, by 1934, 35, 36, the black African population has become a clear target of the Aryan doctrine and Aryan concept of racial purity, if you will. We're actually, contrary to what is oftentimes alleged by historians who clearly write a historical narrative to protect, quote-unquote, the actions of good white Christians, if you will, leading up to the Second World War, that it was black Africans who were living in Nazi Germany who became the first prime targets. They didn't even get the concentration camp, per se. They were basically rounded up, put in camps, and basically murdered in significant numbers, though it didn't take much to rid the country of 25 million black Africans. It is something that, as a scholar, as a historian, I have watched for over 50 years the silence about the quote-unquote missing victim, quote-unquote, of Nazi genocide and brutality again. Those who were brought to Germany even before the First World War, and of course the British lost their colonies and their foothold in Mother Africa. In fact, last week we cited to you a book, a very interesting book, very detailed book, well written, if you will, by a Caucasian, entitled Paris, 1919, and it was the conference in Paris in 1919, presided over by the United States, Britain, and France. Ottoman Empire, which most of you know is Turkey, but in the book, the Paris Conference of 1919, are very interesting couple of chapters about how the possessions of Germany were handled, Germany's possessions in Black Africa, if you will, on both the east and west coast of Black Africa, how those colonies were handled. But in the process, there was discussions about how the black African population in Germany would be handled. There was discussion about right of return, but the countries, primarily Britain, if you will, and the Portuguese, indicated that they did not want a sophisticated group of Black Africans returned to Black Africa because some of them had, as we used the term earlier, had integrated very well into the German population per se until the beginning of the Nuremberg Laws, not to be confused with the Nuremberg Trials, which took place in 1945. The Nuremberg Laws were put into play by 1936 by the Ossenführer of quote-unquote racial purity in Nazi Germany. And, of course, that's when immediately these Black Africans, some who had lived, as we said, in, let's give you a time frame, if you will. It would say it's 1935. You had been called to the prefect's office, if you will, in other words, the police. And though you have, in fact, let's say you were born in Mother Germany, that your parents, your Black African parents, had been brought to Germany in, let's say, 1896, 1897. Let's say you had been born in 1912 or 1913, before the First World War. You had gone to school in Germany, if you will. You had integrated. Let's say you were living in one of the German cities in the northern part of Germany, if you will, which seemed to be less racist than the southern part of Germany, particularly that portion of Germany more towards the Austrian and Polish border and Czechoslovakian borders and et cetera. So all of this becomes crucial when one understands the thinking of those that understand and have a real appreciation of what genocide is all about. Now, that leads us back to Donald Trump, if you will, the imperial president. We have said on these programs for the last month, there is a plan afoot, and it has already been identified. Some of you may have recognized it. Many of you probably didn't, unfortunately. To the brothers and sisters in Chicago, Illinois, I'm quite sure that they're having discussions there. Of course, the Chicago Tribune, Chicago Daily Papers will not go to great lengths to publish the concerns, but Chicago is one of the cities that have been discussed, particularly by the right-wing Nazi senior advisor, Brennan, Mr. Brennan, in Mr. Trump's inner circle, actually serving as his national security advisor for race, if you will. Although maybe one of these days it will come out on what the role of the man who websites prior to the election of November 8th, 2016, his websites were legendary, with attacks upon President Barack Obama, black people, and et cetera. And the special National Security Advisor, not to be confused with General Flynn, though General Flynn is not far behind as it pertains to his dislike for African Americans and others of color. But Mr. Bannon, if you will, is legendary, and in fact, we first became aware of him doing an examination of racist activities, training facilities, and et cetera, in a place which we've talked about for the last 5 or 6 years, actually two places, but the key place, if you will, where significant training has been going on for quite some time is just outside of Sandpoint, Idaho, along the Spirit Lake, Spirit River, and et cetera. If you were coming through Montana, let's say, from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, on your way to Washington State, and on your way to Seattle, as an example, you'd be going through Spokane. And as you go through the so-called panhandle of Idaho, you would come into direct contact with, quote-unquote, that area. Very dangerous area if you're a person of color. I cannot begin to tell you how dangerous the area is. In fact, every once in a while, we send a shout-out to our homies, our white homies there in and around Sandpoint, if you will, because of how dangerous they are, and the kind of activities that they're very much involved in. In fact, they were very much involved in the well-planned, and thank God it did not happen, the planning of the bombing of Martin Luther King Jr. Day in Spokane, Washington, about 8 years ago, if you will. And the activities that were going on, very little was ever discussed with the general population about Sandpoint, Idaho, one of the most dangerous places in the United States. Just ahead of a place where Dylan Root, if you will, finally sentenced to die. It will probably be 5 or 6 years before anything happens to him. But Dylan Root, more than a connection, it's one of the reasons that they really didn't want him to testify extensively in his trial, and particularly the death portion of his trial, because of his activities. In fact, if it had not been that he had, Dylan Root, by the way, we're moving all the way back to the other side of the nation. Unfortunately, this is the way narratives work. If it had not been for the fact that he had fallen off to sleep, he would have gotten to a very secure facility just outside of a place called Mars, North Carolina, if you will. Very interesting place, designed as it pertains to how its facilities are designed, similar to the training facility outside of Sandpoint, Idaho. A lot of activities, if you will, in that part of western North Carolina. Not very safe, if you will, for people of color, if you know what we mean. It is also a facility there that is very much involved in support of an operation in a place called Hope, South Carolina, a place that Mr. Root stopped at. And in fact, we talked about that on our television program a couple of years ago, so that's something that just is being made up, if you will. There was about 10 hours that Dylan Root spit that no one can figure out what the heck was really going on, if you know what I mean. And then there was a town called York, South Carolina, which is actually south of Greensboro, North Carolina. Interesting facility, if you will. Very, very interesting. But it is the facility that Dylan Root was trying to reach, if you will, that if he would have been able to have continued on the route that he was on, that he would have been able to reach Mars, North Carolina. That's a very well fortified place there, Sandpoint, Idaho, as well as it is in a place in Arkansas, if you will, and another place in Tennessee. Oh, you'd be surprised at the number of well fortified white supremacist military style camps and et cetera. Anyway, part of what the training is that's been going on in preparation for what actually happened is what is called urban warfare and the anticipation of house to house, street to street fighting, if you will, the need to be able to move into these zones, if you will, some of which are already being designated for Chicago, if you will. It's no accident that our beloved imperial president talks about the fact that an end is going to be brought to the problem of drugs and carnage and et cetera. You know, we always ask the question, particularly given the amount of drugs on one hand and the number of guns that come in. We don't have any gun manufacturing facilities anywhere in black urban America. And we really don't have access to the drug market, even though we may have contact with cartels in Colombia, if you will, in Panama, and et cetera. But really, black Americans really don't. We are just the sellers, if you will, street sellers at best of the drugs and et cetera, which are ravishing our community. But I got to tell you, my friends, tonight from Minneapolis and St. Paul, that the president and his close advisors, real internal staff, have a real plan. And Rahm Emanuel, who himself served in the White House, so he understands how covert operations are carried out and et cetera, knows the kinds of discussions that go on that talk in terms of internal and external security, national security, and et cetera. And these quarantine zones that are already being looked at. And by the way, for those of you here in the Twin Cities that, you know, look in shock and eyes buck and, you know, talking about quarantine zones, when the Major League All-Star Game was held here 3 years ago, one fine summer, if you will, the Downtown Council, who was in this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, if you will, talking in terms of the concern about violence and shooting. In fact, we had a couple more shootings downtown Minneapolis. This is for our domestic and international audiences, if you will. We've unfortunately had a lot of shootings. We've had only 3 homicides. We're not quite like Chicago, but we do shoot a lot of people up here, proportionally. But anyways, back to the Downtown Council and the Chamber of Commerce and et cetera, they did an excellent job when the Major League All-Star Game was here in Minneapolis of quarantining and declaring protection zones. And a lot of young African Americans were kept out of downtown Minneapolis, if you will. They didn't quite have it figured out. Stopped at checkpoints, stopped for ID checks and et cetera. And then there were operatives, if you will, who many of these young African-Americans didn't have a clue, who were telling them that it would probably not be good for them to go downtown, to stay out in the hood and do their thing, you know, shoot it up, take the drugs and things like that. No one ever asked a question, like I said before, where do these guns, there are some of you that are listening, we know, are a part of sophisticated operations of law enforcement, security, protection, et cetera. You know, these young men and women, I mean, we're not talking about no old, rusty, you know, cylinder gun, 5-shot 22 or that. We're talking about state-of-the-art guns that go for anywhere from 400 to 500 to 600, 700 on the legal market, if you will, maybe even more on the illegal market. And I've always wondered why no one has really asked the question, where do these state-of-the-art guns come from? Now, many of them are you will, and then sent up from, oops, Mexico, if you will, along with the drugs, if you will. And others of these weapons come from, this is a group of immigrants that no one wants to talk about, Russian mafia, if you will, who bring in a significant amount of contraband, if you will, as a part of their continued relationship with the Russian mafia in Mother Russia, if you will. And they do not think for a minute that Vladimir Putin and the Russian intelligence services are very much involved, if you will. In fact, at one point, not too long ago, maybe 5 years ago, the Chinese intelligence services tried to indicate to the United States that there was more going on with respect to weapons and etc. coming into the United States, but there were some who now are a part of the Trump inner circle who maintain they weren't interested in hearing from the little yellow SOBs, if you will, about what it is they thought they knew about what was going on in the United States. That will be one of the fatal missteps that our imperial president will probably make in the next 8 to 10 weeks, maybe even sooner, as it pertains to conflict, if you will. The president is convinced that China needs to be taught a lesson, if you will. The North Koreans need to be pounced on, if you will. Of course, President Trump does not understand, and many of his intelligence and national security analyzers, if you will, and advisors and et cetera, really think, even though they should have the experience of the conflicts of the 1950s where the Chinese and the North Koreans fought a powerful American war machine, which in fact it was still well-seasoned, if you will. They had just won a significant conflict of 5 years prior, if you will, before the conflict began in North and South Korea and et cetera. That's another part of history. In fact, that conflict became so intense, for those of you that do take time to read the historical books, that Douglas MacArthur, the great imperial general, if you will, he used to call him the grand guru of Japan, if you will, a man who actually saw himself as the emperor of Japan, if you will, though Japan already had an emperor, that MacArthur wanted to drop an atomic bomb on he wanted to drop 2 or 3, and he saw the opportunity to go further into China. He talked and argued about the fact this was the time to deal with the yellow menace. The only problem was that things were pretty tense between the Russians, who share a common border with China, also share a small border with North Korea and et cetera, and the Russians were not interested and being a part of the annihilation, as American planners talked about in 1949-50-51. And then there was also the McCarthyism that was going on. Joe McCarthy was doing his thing, as we said earlier in this program, with regards to the communist threat, if you will. Now, let me just say this to you, and we've given you purposely pieces of international history and et cetera. We are in a country. Now, somebody will slip up and say it. I'm not talking in terms of calculation such as this program, because we are very calculating in the kind of information that we are putting out and making available. We understand that it is being analyzed, evaluated, if you will, weighed, and et cetera. No, there is a whole another segment that does not think that anyone will pay any attention to, as we said at the top of this program tonight, the bad commies, if you will, and the good commies. Now, Joe McCarthy and that whole group of people, one thing to their credit, if you will, all communists were bad, if you will. America had to be ever vigilant, you know, the whole theme of better red than dead, better dead than red. The arms race, if you will, and Americans deeply embedded sleepers, as we used to call them, in the American military-industrial complex, if you will, giving the information and technology to the Russians, helping the Russians to catch up in the late 1940s and develop their own nuclear program, which actually changed the course of political, social relationships, ideologies, and et cetera. Oh, you know, we think in terms of, well, the only people that were really considered to be not trusted as it pertains to the arms race were those of the Jewish race, if you will. And we go back to really the only two people that were actually executed in the United States for treason and spying, if you will, to a Jewish husband and wife, who were very much involved, according to the documentation, in providing information and aid and comfort to the enemy. And consequently, that is the genesis and the continued narrative about it's amazing for those of us that are still here and about who have watched, quote-unquote, the relationship, if you will, between democracy and communism, if you will, setting aside the whole situation with the Muslim world, if you will, though that has become a problem, but the Muslim world does not have nuclear capabilities. That's the reason that Israel has insisted that under no circumstances can Iran be allowed to develop nuclear capabilities. Some threaten that they will help the Saudis and the Egyptians have and create and develop a nuclear capability. We know that's all hogwash. If one has followed closely over the years, the real discussions that go on in the Beltway, if you will, as Washington, D.C. and other places, and in quote-unquote Europe about, my God, what will happen if the Muslim world is ever to quote-unquote achieve nuclear capabilities. The Israelis have that one right. They clearly know. And by the way, see where the Israelis, feeling that they have Donald Trump in their back pocket or whatever, have announced the building of 2,500 additional settlements in the occupied territories, which means that, as we've said before and talked about for over 20 years in the mediums that we are involved in, that there will never be a two-state solution, if you will. The Israeli/Jewish community received, quote-unquote, implementation of the United Nations resolution and the agreements between the so-called superpowers, if you will, which actually went back all the way again to 1919. In fact, in a column in the black newspaper here in the Twin Cities, which we have, we wrote about how it is so sad that there is not the kind of honest dialogue that goes on about the pain and suffering of the Palestinian people, who will never have their state, a Palestinian state, if you will, even though the United Nations Resolution 181 and others clearly indicated that there was to be a two-state solution. Benjamin Netanyahu clearly knows that it will never happen, as more European Jews have come, quote-unquote, in immigrated and migrated to Mother Israel. Many of them, unfortunately, have brought very racist attitudes based on both religion and color. And in many regards, those who are part of what is called the settlement community have made the determination that there is no Palestinian, no Muslim, no Arab who is worthy, quote-unquote, of having parity, if you will, as pertains to citizenship with any European Jew who now resides in Israel. It's the kind of discussion that is very uncomfortable for those Israelis who think that there must be a two-state solution, and there must be equality, if you will, fairness, if you will, in regards to the implementation of the commitment of Resolution 181 and a two-state solution and etc. But the settlers who have come, many have come, in fact, many have come from Mother Russia. It's been amazing how many of the Jews / Israelis who have come out of the Ukraine, if you will, of Poland, Eastern Europe, and etc., and have resettled over the last 35, 40 years, who feel that, and they always cite Scripture. It's amazing how people can use the Bible for their own purposes. The Muslims have basically been told that the Quran is nothing but a piece of toilet paper, if you will. That is their statement. That is not the reflection of this commentator or the comments that we are making. That now is a significant play. The decision to send in a true Zionist as the next ambassador to Israel, who has already indicated that under direction from the imperial president, Donald Trump, that Jerusalem will become the capital for Israel, if you will, which of course cuts across everything that is important and sacred to Palestinians and to Arabs, if you will. Jerusalem, a place that is seen as equally or should be equally shared by Christians, Jews, Muslims, and etc. And so the two-state solution has been lost. That will create conflict in the Middle East over the next number of months. And, of course, the decision, now we go to the executive orders that have been signed in the last 3 days by the imperial president. And one of the things that has been done today was to basically identify a name. And I noticed that the White Fourth Estate has had a little trouble in the last 7 or 8 hours as of the actual broadcasting of this program here from the Midwest, Middle America, if you will, of identifying the countries that significant restrictions have been put on, and there will be no migration, immigration, and refugee as it pertains to being able to enter the United States. That's not going to sit well, but then what that is a recruitment tool for those who have such animus, if you will, and such hatred and such lack of trust of the West, if you will, and the United States and et cetera. So that will be a conflict which will be interesting to watch how the imperial president and his circle of men and women, he's got some women in there that aren't far from being almost insane and dripping, salivating the blood, if you will, of people of color, if you will, in a white and pure America. You see, what the things that we dishonest about as a nation, a Christian nation too, as they go to great lengths to talk about what great Christians we are, they are, if you will, because I've also heard the doctrine and etc. that black people, if you will, they usually use the NIG, were not the chosen children or people of Jesus or God and etc., if you will. And so it is like all other things that we've seen happen in this country, particularly since the Emancipation Proclamation of 1863, is that we are seen and continue to be seen, we African Americans, the sons and daughters of the African, are seen to be nothing more than property, if you will. And property has no rights. In fact, Billy Bob will tell you that his dog, his pig, his horse, if you will, his mule, has more rights and enjoys greater affection from Billy Bob than a negro does, if you will. We are considered, we the sons and daughters of the African who have suffered so much. I still remember the statement by now President Donald Trump. See, many folks attempt to get us to forget that. And we have a crew of Negroes that have been developed here just since the 8th of November. I've been fascinated by the Negroes that have been running to the Trump Tower in New York, being allowed to go up on the elevator. I don't know what floor they really get off on. I don't think they get off on the same floor that all the good white folks do. But they come out and they talk in terms of what a great man that Donald Trump is. We talked last week about the Jeff Sessions hearing for Attorney General of the United States. And I don't know where they got these three brothers from. All of them big men, the size of the on the plantation, what used to be called the whipping boss, if you will, big black men, all 300 pounds and et cetera. And all of them professed, I mean, they professed love, if you will, affection. I mean, kind of an affection that, you know, maybe isn't quite proper, if you will. But I remember the last of the speakers, and by the way, sitting right next to John Lewis, and this after John Lewis had been defamed and et cetera, but they talked in terms of how they loved Jeff Sessions. And I said on the program last week that the brother named Smith, if you will, who was former general counsel to the Senate Judiciary Committee, that if he would have been asked by Jeff Sessions to go into the bathroom and service Jeff Sessions, if you know what I mean, he would have done it. He said he was the greatest man that he had ever known, and he had love and affection for him. Jeff Sessions is a Klansman. I mean, Jeff Sessions' reputation as a young cracker, if you will, in Alabama, and the role that he played in encouraging and plotting and planning with white terrorists in the South during that particular period of time. It's just unbelievable that any black person would consider Jeff Sessions to be anything but a Klansman, if you will, a part of the Kev Foster Brigade, the one that was so much involved in 1872 in the massacre of 150 black Louisiana National Guardsmen who were conscripted, if you will, under color of law to be a part of the militia, who, in order to save innocent black people in and around Colfax, Louisiana, surrendered under a white flag, if you will, and were proceeded to be killed, executed, 150 African-American or black military personnel in front of a courthouse in Colfax, Louisiana. For those of you that know Louisiana and have been in and around Colfax, which is in, you know, in between Baton Rouge and Shreveport and up toward that way, there is a marker there in front of the courthouse in Colfax, Louisiana, which is the spot in which 150 black military personnel were murdered by the Foster Brigade of the Ku Klux Klan or the White Chameleon or the White Knights and et cetera. You would be surprised. Maybe some of you that are listening in tonight would not be. You would be surprised at the kind of discussions that have been going on for about a year, particularly amongst those who are super supporters of white supremacy and et cetera, and join with their quote-unquote version of Adolf Hitler, who serves as the national security advisor, Mr. Bannon, to the president, to the imperial president, and et cetera. Now, we say all that to say that there is additional documentation and et cetera. What's happened is that there's almost enough of a breach in the intelligence community of the American intelligence services, the outgoing head of the National Intelligence Agency almost gave it up because they are so angry with the disrespect shown by the imperial president, now President Donald Trump, about the efforts of the sacrifice of the American intelligence services. And by the way, Vladimir Putin and the Russian intelligence services are enjoying every bit of this weakening of America's intelligence capabilities. That's the reason that there's a certain level of nervousness within certain circles within the Trump camp about the conversation between General Flynn and Soviet high-ranking, very, very, very high-ranking Soviet intelligence officers and foreign ministry individuals, if you will. But John McCain, and to a even maybe more degree, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, are aware. But it also is a part of, because in the NIST, the importance of African Americans who have served with distinction and et cetera, such as John Lewis, such as Elijah Cummings and et cetera. But these are men that have to be careful, because accidents, quote unquote, do happen in America, if you will, to important figures within the African American community and et cetera, such as a Malcolm X, a Martin Luther King Jr., and individuals at lower, so-called lower, more local levels, and et cetera, Gregory Evers, and et cetera. Colin Powell really said it best about 7 years ago, 8 years, well, 9 years ago, when there was serious consideration for him to run for the presidency as George Bush's term, 8-year term, came to an end. And it was Colin Powell's wife, a very bright, insightful lady, who told him, based on what had happened to him as it pertains to the actions of then Vice President Cheney and Condoleezza Rice, if you will, who did everything they could to destroy Colin Powell, that Colin Powell, with his knowledge, being former chairman of the Joint Chiefs and Secretary of State, such things as that, he would be a prime figure to be assassinated if he decided in 2007 to have announced that it would be his intention to run for president of the United States. At that time, a young senator out of Illinois by the name of Barack Obama was becoming very, very popular, and there were a lot of expectations. The decision was, though, that they could not afford, the extreme right could not afford to have two African Americans vying for the presidency of the United States, representing the two major parties, Republicans and Democrats. And so certain threats were made as it pertains to the well-being and the life of Colin Powell. Oh, it's all in the records and the archives. Now, I have to tell you, my friends, tonight, that the Russian intelligence services were very well-versed, very keen, very knowledgeable about what was happening with regards to Colin Powell, a man very well-respected for his military genius, if you will, for his political depth and et cetera, but it was his wife. I take you back, by the way, to some articles in Newsweek, in which Newsweek came the closest to talking in terms of the treachery of Vice President Dick Cheney and of Condoleezza Rice, National Security Advisor, in attempting to destroy by any means, including the possible assassination of Colin Powell, if Colin Powell announced that he intended to run for the Republican nomination to run for president of the United States in the 2008 election. Colin Powell backed away, listening to his beloved wife, understanding, because as a military man who had been in some of the most sensitive positions, knowing what was happening, you have to remember also there was still the massive worldwide search for Osama bin Laden, if you will. The United States was conducting summary execution, if you will, in a desperate attempt. The utilization of drones had come full circle, if you will. People were being killed all across the planet as a part of the revenge of 9/11. And so Colin Powell understood that his life could be taken. His life was in danger, if you will. So now we move forward to 2016, 2016/2017. And people want you to believe that, and I don't know, it sounded almost like something from the Manchurian Candidate, both versions of that movie, that some way or another, our beloved imperial president, Donald Trump, had been brainwashed, if you will. But it is clear that there has to be a little better job of keeping him in tow. He is a man who has an enormous ego, if you will. He is a man who desires to be loved, though he does not necessarily return that love. He is a man who has become so fickle with regards to his anger about the fact that he is not able to get across the fact that he did not win the popular vote, you know. But he has not thought through what he is doing to his own party, though you have to understand that early on in life, Donald Trump was a registered Democrat, if you will. At some point, people are still trying to figure out at what point he turned into a Republican. But most importantly, he has turned into an opportunist, if you will. And so he sits in the White House tonight, if you will. He is signing, he loves to, it's quite clear in the last 5 days, he loves to sign executive orders, if you will. And of course, it is all justifiable in their mind because it is destroying the legacy of America's one and only, and maybe the only in the future of this nation, African American who has served as president of the United States of America for two consecutive terms. With overwhelming pluralities, if you will. People don't want to seem to respect that, understand that, embrace that. And in fact, in some regards, I don't think that there's really deep animus by Donald Trump against Barack Obama as a president, as a former president, etc. But I'm reminded of some of the information in a document that has been hard to obtain by many, and that is the beyond the two-page summary given to the then president-elect in that meeting, if you will, in which, and then later after the election, in which the heads of the intelligence agency, including Mr. Comer, the head of the FBI, Roman, that there was significant information and data, very damaging information, relevant to, let's put it like this, the lifestyle of the imperial president of the United States at this particular hour. It wasn't so much the extracurricular activities, wanting to sleep in the same bed that the presidential suite in the particular hotel that President Obama and his lovely wife, Michelle, had slept in. He wanted to sleep in that same bed. He had fantasies about what he would do to Michelle Obama, et cetera. Oh, yes, that is in the report from the intelligence entities. Not American, by and large. Not only were the British a part of this, and it's one of the reasons that Vladimir Putin demanded to know what the intelligence reports look like, and there's some reason to believe that Mr. Brennan, the outgoing head of the Office of National Intelligence, actually played a ruse, if you will, and provided some documents with different information in it, and then it was what is called tagged and given to members of President Trump's so-called internal security team to determine who it was that would leak the information. That is the reason that General Flynn has come under such suspicion, if you will. And it's the reason that General Flynn thought that when he, just around Christmas time, when he was talking to, quote-unquote, his Russian counterpart in Moscow, that they were on a secure line. It appears that when the information was leaked all over the place, if you will, that General Flynn became very uneasy. Now, Senator McCain, who, as we said, is a decorated military person, a pilot, if you will, a man who served his country in Vietnam. And his associate, Senator Lindsey Graham, had talked about 8 days ago, as of the live broadcast of this program, about the importance of examining what and how the conversation took place, why it took place, when, in fact, there was still a sitting president of the United States of America. His name was Barack Obama, but then he was a man who was greatly despised by Vladimir Putin, who at one time, when Barack Obama was first elected, and this was the first tour by Vladimir Putin as president, then he became prime minister, and then he just came on back in and just took back over the presidency. But he had called the United States weak and decadent, if you will, for electing a black baboon as president of the United States. Yes, that was the reflections. Now, you have to understand, at some point, of course, American intelligence analysts and et cetera made this information known to President Barack Obama, some out of a sense of loyalty and et cetera, some out of a sense of amusement. But the fact of the matter is that the president knew. He also knew that the Israeli, this is interesting too, that the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who's clearly indicated that he had a real serious dislike for Barack Obama, but it was actually kind of a cover-up because, interestingly enough, both Vladimir Putin, the head of the Russian Federated Republic, and Benjamin Netanyahu, prime minister based on the Israeli governmental structure, had basically made the same kinds of statements about the black baboon, if you will. Now, this was consistent. Oh, it's important as we go into the last 20 minutes of tonight's program, that this was consistent with statements that were attributed to Donald Trump in electronic intercepts and et cetera. Mr. Trump did not really understand how information could be called up and electronic intercepts take place. Donald Trump made basically the same kinds of reflections about President Barack Obama and the whole issue of the birthers, if you will, for those of you that honestly remember. Now, for those that pretend that they can't remember the birthers and et cetera, we understand. We don't accept it. But we understand how the game is played in this country, if you will, particularly on the issue of race. By the way, this reflection that we're making now takes us all the way back to the beginning of tonight's program, where we told you that Chicago is the city that is on the hit list, if you will. It will be Chicago where the experimental paramilitary operations will begin to take place. It is the reason that the imperial president is making statements relevant to the fact that he will bring the feds in. Let us also say this, as we move all over the map, yes, we do, but we are able to do that because we have a vast knowledge and understanding of how things work, if you will, in this society and on this planet. I take you back to the beginning of the conflict in North Dakota as it pertains to the Dakota Pipeline, and it was interesting that you could not get people to click for those that were on the ground there in North Dakota who were confronted by these paramilitary individuals dressed in black with black baseball caps and a separate bulletproof vest and weapons. Remember they had the dogs? Remember these quote-unquote paramilitary types showed up with the dogs? The sheriff of the counties in and around the reservation and the pipeline and et cetera fell back. And at one point, contractors, many of these men that day worked in Iraq specifically, were all a part of Blackwater and all of those interesting groups. Those groups had been reactivated, if you will. And when the president today, and particularly even in the interview when he was asked, does he intend, what is his thinking about torture, if you will, and what they call black sites, and that is a whole story of itself. We take you back, though, to that period of time in 2003, 4, 5, if you will, 6, both the end of the first term of George Bush, the second term, when Condoleezza Rice, I was so saddened by that because it was people of color, if you will, whose rights were being violated, though they were foreigners, if you will. I'm going to see how many of you remember the term, the coded term, rendition, if you will. And where she came up with that for is that Condoleezza Rice is a person who has a great love of classical music, if you will. She always maintained that it was what separated her from the common black people. This was a woman who grew up with the little girls that were killed at the Baptist Church in Birmingham in that savage bombing, if you will. But Condoleezza was just always, quote unquote, in both engrossed and et cetera with music. And so rendition is a part of a reference, if you will, to those that are more musically inclined. And so for those that pretend that they can't remember, when the United States started taking Muslims from here in the United States, I refer you to a series of articles in the New York Times and et cetera about the disappearance of a rather disturbing number of Muslims from Detroit, if you will, right after 9/11, before Guantanamo was designated as the holding pen, if you will, for people that were never charged with any crimes and et cetera. And around 2004, 2005, some journalists came up with what was this rendition where people were being put on private jets and et cetera and flown all over the world. The United States had what they call black sites in places like Poland and Romania and Bulgaria, if you will, sites where the people of the Muslim origin and religion and et cetera thought to be certainly needed to be as it pertains to the war on Islam and looking for Osama bin Laden, were taken to these black sites, if you will. The only problem is there are black sites here in the United States. We say this to you tonight to indicate that part of the discussion that is going on right now in preparation for intervention in Chicago, if you will, to a lesser degree, Los Angeles, if you will, is that once the administration confirms that it's just like the whole thing about the CIA allegedly, institution and et cetera does not allow it to do anything inside the continental United States, it drives the FBI crazy sometimes, but now, you know, the FBI and all the rest of the intelligence agencies have an agreement. The CIA has been running domestic intelligence operations for a long time, if you will. In fact, we have here in the Twin Cities an individual who carries a significant rank in the United States military who has been quietly working behind the scenes for a number of weeks suddenly. To get folks' minds right about that Donald Trump is the right kind of individual, quote-unquote, to lead America, and that he will do right by the Negro race, if you will. In fact, the role of this particular individual, who carries, as we said, a military rank, is to indicate that we, the African-American population here in the Twin Cities, will be afforded a significant opportunity to work some of the jobs, if you will. The employment and et cetera will be forthcoming and is a part of the 25 million jobs. In fact, one of the discussions that is taking place is that there will be an opportunity for a whole group of young African Americans from the Twin Cities to go work up on the pipeline and et cetera. What that leads me back to was those group of Africans brought here from New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, that no one really heard from again when they were brought to the military camp in northern Minnesota. Another piece, if you will. Oh, there's documentation of all of this that we are saying, but there are always those leaders within your community who say that, oh, that's just a bunch of hogwash, that's not true, you know, that your constitutional rights and et cetera are protected. Hey, man. In fact, what they're doing here just in the last 24 hours is that, in fact, we have had more African-American police officers, and we only have about 62 within an 870-person force. We've had more African-American police officers from a force of 62 charged and sentenced and in prison than anything approaching any Caucasian officers or any other officers, if you will. Yesterday, too, Officer Hamilton, Etheridge Hamilton, 42 years of age, has been charged with second-degree aggravated assault, which is 10 years. And Jordan Davis, the son of the former high-ranking Democratic committeeman and chairman of the Democratic committee in the state, and et cetera, William Davis, a man who, oh, my God, took apart the local cap agency to the tune of millions of dollars, if you will, over a period of 20 years. And everybody, Bill Davis, the father of Jordan Davis, will be sentenced later. The reason he hasn't been sentenced, though, is that the federal authorities are working and pressuring him real hard to identify and turn state's evidence with regards to some of the members of his board of directors who did not carry out their fiduciary responsibility in some cases for a number of years, while William Davis, Bill Davis, the father of Jordan Davis, carried out a very elaborate plan of fraud and et cetera. And by the way, for those that say that we are picking on Mr. Davis, you probably pretend that you were not aware that in June, Mr. Davis pleaded guilty to 16 separate federal charges of the violation of federal law, fraud, and et cetera, to the tune of, as we said, as much as $800,000 or more, if you will. And so we see all of that in play because the real purpose and goal tonight is to indicate that there is great trouble awaiting the African-American population in the United States, if you will. Keep your eye on Chicago. Keep your eye on the back and forth that is now already starting between Mayor Rahm Emanuel and the Bush administration. This concern about the carnage and the violence and et cetera that is taking place in Chicago, the only problem is we never ask the right questions. We set the stage almost an hour ago on this program when we said, where are the drugs and the guns coming from? Not only in Chicago, but Milwaukee, if you will, but right here in our own beloved Twin Cities. I'm fascinated by the sophistication and newness of the weapons that I'm aware of that show up at these shooting scenes and et cetera. On that particular note, let us, in the last 5 minutes of tonight's program, let us send out our prayers to the Beeks family. Grandmother, mother, aunt, loved one, and et cetera, was gunned down, caught in gang crossfire at 21st and Penn in North Minneapolis in June of last year. An excellent job. We have to do right, if you will. An excellent job by the Minneapolis Police Department, if you will. Chief Janae Harto, Assistant Chief Chris Arneson, if you will. Lieutenant Richard Zimmerman, if you will, head of the homicide unit. And, of course, Sergeants Green and Thompson. But it was the Beeks family that kept the pressure on. The daughter of Mrs. Beeks oftentimes being seen knocking on doors, asking people to stand up, to come forward, and et cetera. At some point, you may or may not be told of how the case was broke, if you will, but the fact of the matter is that it did happen, and the individual that is being involved in the death of Ms. Beeks, if you will be brought to trial. Now, this is a disturbing narrative in the reverse, because no one has said anything. No one talks about the Star Tribune pretended a month ago that they were going to write a story and confront the county attorney, Michael Freeman, a man who is legendary with regards to how he prosecutes African-Americans, except those African-Americans who are part of the federal informant program and who are involved in keeping drugs and guns moving in the African-American community, and who are involved in setting up situations in which African-Americans are turned on each other, commit acts of violence against each other, et cetera. We've had a couple of incidents, shootings, some case deaths, that have been carried out by individuals who are part of a special, quote-unquote, unit, if you will, of confidential informants and et cetera, whose chore. In fact, some of them are actually moved around city to city, if you will. We have that in the case of the two-year-old African-American baby shot and killed while riding in the back seat with his baby sister, his 15-month-old sister at that time, in North Minneapolis on Laurie and Penn. And we are so saddened. On one hand, as we said, we feel blessed that the Beeks family has seen justice served and that the individual and perpetrator involved in the death of their loved one will be brought to trial, if you will. On the other hand, we cannot understand the refusal of the county attorney to charge the individual involved in the shooting death of the two-year-old Jones, if you will. We cannot understand, and we talked about it a couple months ago, we test to see what the leadership is going to do, what it's going to say. It says nothing, it does nothing, it will. But when a two-year-old baby and his 15-month-old sister, one shot and killed, if you will, outright, really, with a shot to the chest, the other one, the good Lord's hand was upon her young shoulders, shot and grazed by a bullet in the leg. The county attorney a couple of weeks ago said in a story written by a reporter by the name of Brandon Stoll, who is also covering trial of the white terrorist who shot and wounded five African Americans outside of the fourth precinct in November of 2015. It has been interesting. In fact, yesterday, a Burnsville police officer, formerly of the Mankato Police Department, who was a close friend and associate of the individual now on trial as the actual gunman, who admitted yesterday on the stand that he and the gunman, the white terrorist, have exchanged text messages and et cetera, talking about black people, talking and using the NIG and et cetera. And what that does, it goes back to Donald Trump, Vladimir Putin, and the Prime Minister of Israel all making the same kind of comment about President Barack Obama, saying that he was born in a grass shack in Kenya to a big black daddy who was some kind of black chief, if you will, who had raped a white woman who was the mother of Barack Obama. Yes, yes, this is how these conversations go. But in the intelligence report that the head of the American intelligence agencies had that afternoon a couple of weeks ago when they met with Donald Trump, who pretended that he didn't remember receiving a summary or hearing anything about the intercepts and et cetera, is that one of the things that puzzled a couple of the heads of the intelligence agencies, if you will, was that the same reference was made by three individuals over the last couple of years about President Barack Obama. Repeat again, the same is made by three individuals. Now, this is the same imperial president that says that he is ordering a federal investigation. Now, you know who it's going to be centered on? Hispanic, Latino, Mexicans, and black people. Because the information to be leaked and nurtured over the next number of weeks is that it has been determined that a very sophisticated conspiracy has been existing for quite some time in the Negro community, where people are being taken to the polls and being given alcohol and dope to vote five, six, or seven times. And by the way, the place of concentration will be Chicago, Illinois. Chicago has been designated as the place to see how the master plan works, how the quarantine zones will work, how the roundups will work. It is a plan that, in some regards, is tailored after, get this, my friend, after the plans that were put in place in those very turbulent and critical years in South Africa, when the South African security forces used every means necessary to hang on as a minority in South Africa. For those of you that like to study, if you will, that you like to make reference, that you like to go back, and et cetera, as we move into the last 120 seconds of tonight's program, take a look at South Africa. Take a look even before the beloved late Nelson Mandela was released from Robben's Island. Take a look at how the South African intelligence services, working with American intelligence services back in the day, if you will, came together with a plan to provide as many informants and et cetera to continue to disrupt the ANC, if you will, the African National Congress, if you will. Take a look at that narrative. There are some books that you may be able to find on social media and et cetera. You'll probably have to go as far as London, if you will. maybe Brazil, if you will, to find the kind of documentation that you need. Again, we appreciate you being with us and listening, if you will. Oh, we know folks are listening. We know that on demand these programs are listened to. Keep your eye, though, on Chicago. That is the quote-unquote epic center of what will be the plan to bring black America, quote-unquote, under control and deal with what is considered to be one of the most significant problems and threats to the well-being, quote-unquote, of a new white America. Again, I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Ron and Don program. God bless you, black America. Continue to stay strong. You will need every strength you can garner. Thank you, and we'll be back next week.